Hello and welcome, everyone. I'm Dr. Ed Staffel. I'm a dentist practicing here in San Antonio, and you're listening to the Dr. Staffel program, and your smile matters. And I do have a guest today, and his name is Dr. Rick Davis. Rick, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
Oh, great. Talk a little bit louder, if you would.
I will try. You keep me posted as to how I'm doing.
Great. That sounds perfect. Now, today we're going to talk about, you've heard me talk many times about how teeth are programmed to last 80 years or better. And so one of the things that is very effective at doing this is saving the teeth and treating the roots and treating the nerves inside of the roots. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So you'll find this program very, very interesting. So be sure and listen carefully, because we're going to have a lot of valuable information and information that you won't hear anyplace else generally. So Dr. Davis is a very good friend of mine. I use him quite a bit as my go-to, one of my go-to endodontists. Now, an endodontist is a person who treats teeth with a root canal treatment. So, Dr. Davis, tell us about yourself and your training.
Well, I've been in San Antonio since about 2001, but originally I was in the state of Washington. I went to dental school in Washington. And I entered the Air Force after I left dental school. I was in the Air Force as a general dentist for 21 years. I did a residency right after school, and then a two-year residency a little later, and then a biomaterials residency a little bit later after that. And I stayed in mostly doing general dentistry, and then the latter half of my career teaching and doing research in general dentistry and dental materials. And then when I retired from the Air Force in 1999, then I went to an endodontic specialty training program in Portland, Oregon, and finished that in 2001 and came to San Antonio and joined a good friend of mine who already had a practice here, Dr. Rick Schwartz, a friend who I knew from the Air Force. I've been practicing here in San Antonio ever since.
Well, you know, you bring such a rich, valued perspective, because you were a general dentist for quite a few years. You said 21 years.
21 years.
And then you worked in dental materials, biomaterials.
Yes, sir. Did a fair amount of research. We had a residency program, and I directed resident research for probably about 10 years.
So you bring a perspective that is very rare in a specialist perspective, and especially in root canal procedures. Now, explain to our listeners, I think everybody knows what a root canal, but let's give them a technical technical definition of what a root canal is.
Well, I think probably the best way to explain it and to go beyond to answer questions that people have is just to talk with your audience about the questions that people bring to us when they're sitting in our office. And the first question people ask is, what is a root canal, and why do I, as a patient, why do I need one?
Yeah.
And so to explain that, I explain that every tooth, solid outside part of the tooth, the enamel and the hard part of the tooth, that's what underlies that. But inside every tooth is living tissue, blood vessels and nerves. And we typically just shorten that to calling it the nerve or the pulp. And if that living tissue inside the tooth is damaged, either from dental decay or trauma like a fracture, or a restoration that's done to repair dental caries, then that nerve will become inflamed and often cause pain. And when that's the case, then the patient says, I can't live with this. And so they go to their dentist and are often then referred to us. And our job is to determine whether the tooth is salvageable, if it can be saved. And if so, to explain to the patient that we can save it by removing that damaged living part of the tooth and replace that with an inert filling material. That eliminates the source of the pain and eliminates potential infection down the road, and that process of removing that living part of the tooth and filling it is the actual root canal procedure.
Now, when we were talking previously the other day, you said one of your pet peeves is about tooth preservation. Tell me why that is.
Well, I think that all too often, people, now that there are options available when a tooth is lost, all too often people just assume that if a tooth has a problem that it's going to be lost simply because we have an alternative, which is a dental implant, which in many cases is a great option to have.
Mm-hmm.
But in my opinion, if a tooth is salvageable, meaning that we can eliminate the decay and eliminate the structural weakness of the tooth and eliminate the potential for pain or infection by doing the root canal, that we can allow the patient to keep their tooth and function as they were before they had the problem, which then they can function the way, you know, we're intended to, by having teeth that provide cosmetics and aesthetics as well as chewing function.
Well, I've made the point on my show before, and we'll review this a little bit, because implants, a lot of implants are being done now, and we do them and like them. But at the same time, we do know from the research that there's nothing like a natural tooth. And one of the things that the research has shown, and this is for my listening audience, that a implant has a 15 times more permeable tissue around it. That is, it's more open to infection and different problems than a natural tooth. So saving a natural tooth is by far and away the best option that you can have. And and yet a lot of people think, well, if we do an implant, we don't have to worry about decay, and we don't have to worry about gum disease and things of that type. But there are other problems. So how do you explain that to patients?
Well, very much like you did, that I just explained that I think that, and I say this as if I were the patient or if my family were the patient, that if it were possible to preserve the tooth that's there and allow the patient to function normally the way that they were before they had the problem, then they're better off. And teeth are, as you already mentioned, you know, designed to last many, many years. You know, I mean, we like to think 80 years. You know, certainly there are problems that can come up that can shorten the life of a tooth, but I find it preferable to have a natural tooth, assuming the tooth doesn't have so many problems that it's not salvageable.
Right. You know, right.
I would not mean to imply that every tooth can be saved in every situation, and that's where diagnosis comes in.
Well, we had a dear patient who was in this week, and she celebrated 104 her 104 birthday Thursday, and she has most of her teeth. She's doing just well, and we have a lot of patients in their 90s, two or three in their hundreds. So this is something that can be done, and that's what I want to get across to the listeners, that there's nothing like a natural tooth. And because it's programmed to last 80-plus years, and will last 80-plus years, but there's one problem. These teeth can't repair themselves, and they need help. So since you're in the you have a lot of knowledge of general dentistry, since you have a lot of knowledge in biomaterials, I want you to talk about what are the things that cause a tooth, why we shouldn't let a small problem like a small cavity or a fracture line or something like that, we should take care of it right away rather than wait till you have pain, which so many people say, well, if it ain't broken, we'll leave it go. And so talk to us about your perspective, since you've had such wonderful training, of how to preserve these teeth.
Well, you've kind of hit on one of my pet peeves, and that is that just what you said, many people, and it's a natural inclination, feel like if I'm not noticing a problem, that I don't have a problem, when in fact most of the problems that we see that lead to the need for a root canal come about because either decay goes unattended or it's gotten to or addressed late after it has destroyed a lot of the tooth structure, which means that the filling has to be quite large. And in all honesty, as good as our filling materials are, they're not lifetime filling materials. They have to be replaced. And each time a filling has to be replaced, the amount of tooth structure that's removed is increased slightly. We try and take away as little tooth structure as necessary, but each time a filling has to be replaced, it gets a little bigger and a little bigger until you get down to involving the nerve. And the same thing applies to teeth that have cracks or fracture lines in them. if we notice those early, then we as dentists can put a restoration in that will prevent progression of the cracks and prevent further damage of the teeth. But of course, you as a patient don't really notice that. That's the job of the dentist to examine, you know, and that's why regular routine exams are so important, so that we can catch problems while they're small before they become larger. So that's the role of the dentist, to detect those incipient problems and address them before they become bigger problems.
Well, one of the things that I find as a practicing dentist for many, many years is that a lot of times that damage, and the big culprit is, of course, an amalgam mercury filling. And there was a lot of issues about mercury, but that's not the issue. The issue is that these mercury fillings will stay in place for a long time, but they really are not good long-term materials, and they cause a lot of decay. And one of the things that we see, and we send a lot of patients to you, is because of cracked teeth. The teeth will crack right through the fracture, through the center of the tooth, or maybe a whole side of it. And so this is probably the biggest problem that we see. Is that in your particular area, cracked teeth, or where the nerve dies from these fractures?
That's a huge problem, and unfortunately it's not just a problem where a crack extends into the tooth and involves the nerve, because we as endodontists can fix that kind of problem. We remove the nerve and we put a filling in there, but a root canal filling in there, and then the tooth can be restored. But if there's a crack that progresses deep into the tooth, it can actually progress down below the level of the bone and into the root structure. And unfortunately, when that happens, because there's no technology available now that can eliminate the crack, very small, but bacteria are microscopic, and it provides a place the bacteria can live below the bone, and the patient then would end up with a chronic infection below the bone level. And in those cases, the only solution, as much as I love to save teeth, in those situations in which a crack progresses below the bone level, then the only solution is to remove the tooth. And we hate to see that.
Well, one of the things that is so valuable from your perspective and all is the microscope that y'all use. Now, tell us about that microscope, how valuable it is, and what you can see with it.
Well, I just couldn't practice endodontics without a microscope. It's a chair-side microscope that we use to focus light and then magnification down inside the tooth. So we're not just looking at an enlarged version of a tooth, we're actually looking.
What power is it?
Oh, they range. They're okay. Anywhere from 3 steps to 12 steps. The higher the magnification, obviously, the okay. more you can see, that you lose depth of field then. So, you know, we get into the 12 to 20 magnification range, and that's a pretty significant magnification in terms of being able to see things that you couldn't otherwise see. And cracks is one of them, because lots of teeth have cracks that don't doom the tooth to failure. It's how deep it is and where it is. With a microscope, we can actually see not only the anatomy of the root canal space that we're trying to work in, but also we can find anomalies like cracks to determine, well, is this tooth salvageable, or has this crack progressed so far that it's not really a salvageable tooth any longer?
And you can see pretty well to the end of that root, can't you? Can you not?
Well, We could see all the way to the end of the roots when the roots are straight.
Yes.
Many teeth have roots that curve, and obviously
okay.
we can't see around the curves, but we could certainly get light down far enough. Say, for example, in the anterior teeth that have relatively straight roots,
yeah.
we can get light down and actually see all the way to the tip of the root of the tooth.
Well, you know, there's something that's been real interesting in my career, and that is when I started out many years ago, molar teeth had 3 canals. But as time has gone on, the human teeth have evolved, and now we find there's many as 6 canals in these back teeth. What's happening with these teeth?
Well, I have to say that, you know, I've lived through the same as you. I guess I'd have to say my career isn't as long and storied as yours is, but what you say is true. You know, actually, you know, human teeth haven't changed in our lifetimes. It's just that our ability to detect these canals, because as we were talking about earlier, the living tissue lives inside the root of each tooth, and each root then has one or more of these little nerve spaces going down in them. And before we had the ability to see into the tooth either directly with a microscope or using advanced imaging like CT imaging, we could only see what was visible to the unaided eye with the light source that we had available. And so typically a posterior tooth, a molar, has three canals because that's what we could find. Now, however, with magnification and the use of cone beam CTs, we commonly see four canals in molar teeth, sometimes five, and even up sometimes six. And it's a very complex anatomy, something that we just didn't appreciate before we had the technology to see it.
Well, that's another reason why we have so many root canal failures, it seems like, that are done by general dentists. I saw a number, you probably have better up-to-date numbers. How many root canals are done a year?
Oh, let's see. There was actually a survey study, and the numbers that I saw recently, I believe it was 2016 data, was 15 million annually. 11 million of those are done by general dentists, and,
yeah,
and
that's
only 4 million are done by endodontists.
Yeah.
So actually, you know, I don't know if your audience really knows it. An endodontist, that word is something that most of our patients have never heard before they come into our office. They know the word root canal, but they know that orthodontists do braces, but they don't know that endodontists are the dental specialists that specialize in treating root canals.
Well, now let's talk a little bit about the CT scan, because that's been an amazing thing. What does that do? What does it look like?
Well, the machine itself is something that's been around for a long time, but it just wasn't available in the dental office because, one, it was too bulky, and two, it was too expensive. But the technology, the computerization technology, has advanced so far in the last 5 to 10 years that now dentists can afford to have machines in their office, so a patient can walk down the hallway from the treatment room into a room that's just down the hallway and sit in a machine that goes around their head and takes x-rays basically continuously from all different angles. And then the computer will integrate all those images that come from all different angles, and they'll integrate them into a single image that you can manipulate. So you can essentially look at a tooth in three dimensions. You can look at it from top to bottom, from front to, you know, what we call the cheek side or the buccal side, all the way to the tongue side, the front side to the back side. So essentially you can see a tooth in all dimensions. You can essentially look right through a tooth, and that's something that's tremendously helpful. In many cases, we can look at a tooth, and before we have to do any invasive procedure, say, you know, this tooth has problems that just weren't visible in a conventional exam, and we then either know how to treat it, or in some cases say, you know, this is a tooth that can't be treated, and rather than embark on a course of treatment that's doomed to failure, we know that ahead of time. That doesn't happen very often, but it's certainly beneficial to the patient to know if what the likelihood is of success based on the anatomy of their tooth and the views that you can get with CT images.
Well, going back to the general dentist doing this, excuse me, and I've done thousands of root canals, but I backed away from doing them because I couldn't get the good long-term success, and especially if they were supporting crowns or bridges or things of that type. In your office, what do you feel is the reasonable life of a successful root canal tooth?
Well, that's a question I get asked all the time.
Right.
And I have to hedge on that a little bit.
Sure.
But it's for a good reason. It's because, you know, if you just look at all the numbers, I mean, you can say success rate of a tooth that has an adequately done root canal should be 90%, and that should last as long as the tooth lasts. But the problem is that the root canal procedure itself isn't usually the reason that a tooth fails. Usually it's from some other problem, either recurrent decay, meaning decay that happens again after the original decay was removed, in which case that can progress to the point where a tooth can't be saved, and you say, well, that was a root canal failure because that root canal treated tooth had to be extracted, but in fact it wasn't because of the root canal. The same thing applies to a tooth that has a fracture. If it's progressed partway into the root of the tooth, not actually below the bone, but it's moving that direction, and then over time, through the best, in spite of the best treatment that we can give it, sometimes those cracks will progress, and sometimes then a tooth is lost later. And again, you know, we tend to blame the root canal, but that wasn't the case. But I would say that if you have a tooth that doesn't have fractures and doesn't get recurrent decay, you can expect about a 90% success rate to last 20 plus years or more.
That's great.
It's very difficult to predict because so many other things start happening to teeth, you know, when the longer they're in the mouth, that you lose a lot of those root canal treated teeth for other reasons, and so you don't have them there to recall.
Well, one of the reasons that I've noticed through the years is people's not compliance in getting a crown put on a root canal tooth and where the seal needs to be protected. Now, talk to us about protecting the seal, because the interior of a tooth is really millions of layers of tubules that are open to bacteria. So if you have a root canal, you're still not out of the woods. Go ahead and talk to us about that.
No, you're not. And it's really, it makes good sense when you stop and think about it. So during the course of the root canal treatment, we remove the nerve. We use medications designed to sterilize the internal part of the tooth. And then once we've sterilized it, we've eliminated potential infection down the road. But then there are two problems that can come about even when you've achieved that, quote, perfect or near perfect result. One is what you said, if you don't seal all, because teeth are microscopically porous and bacteria are microscopic. So if you don't seal those, the we call them tubules, the outer part of the tooth, or it's actually porous. If you don't seal that, then you have a risk of recontamination of the root canal filling. That's actually not the greatest risk. The greatest risk really is structural, because if a tooth doesn't already have a protective restoration that covers the whole tooth, a crown, then when we remove tooth structure, which we have to do in order to do a root canal procedure, then we have weakened a tooth that's probably already somewhat weak because it needed that root canal to begin with for a reason, usually because of a deep filling or decay. And so that tooth isn't strong. Even if you put a filling will occupy space and rebuild the shape, but it doesn't provide strength. And so then the tooth, even when you've achieved your hopefully perfect root canal result, it's structurally not as strong as it needs to be to allow that patient to function normally for all those 20 plus years. Sooner or later, we run the risk of fracture of the tooth. So the crown, I don't consider the root canal process complete until the patient has an adequate restoration placed over the top of it. And that's something that the general dentist will do.
Which is typically going to be a crown.
Typically going to be a crown. We have different names for them depending upon how extensive they are, but I think you can just say generically a crown.
Okay. Now, that we've talked about the technology that's so different now from what it was, and the wonderful things that we can see, and talk about the variation of the canals, because when we look at the illustrations in our textbooks, we see some really variable designs of the natural nerve, making it seemingly like it's going to be very difficult to seal these canals up. So how do you approach these?
Well, you're exactly right. There is a tremendous amount of variation, not just from the, quote, idealized picture that you'd see in a book, but just within, you know, among different people, the same tooth can have different anatomy, different number of roots, different curvatures of the roots, and you get a sense of that looking at two-dimensional x-rays, but you get a real sense of that when you're looking either at a CT image, or many times in the course of training, we have the opportunity to take extract the teeth and put them through a process where you can actually clear or make transparent the tooth surrounding the root canal space. And boy, it is eye-opening to see the very complex anatomy of the nerve space. So that leads to the question then that you brought up of how do we seal those? Well, in reality, you can't get 100% seal. And so fortunately, what we found, because we do have good recall data on the success rate of root canals, is that even when we can't achieve a complete 100% seal, we are able to achieve enough of a seal to get success, meaning that we have healing, absence of symptoms, the tooth feels and acts normally. But what we do in order to do the best that we can is typically we'll use more than one visit that allows us to put a medication inside the tooth. So in the first visit, we remove the nerve tissue and basically clean out that nerve space, and then we'll put a medication inside there, which then diffuses into more of the microscopic areas of the tooth that you can't reach mechanically with instruments, and allow that to, one, kill bacteria, and two, dissolve tissue. And then we'll go back in on a subsequent visit and remove that medication and then dry the root canal space and then compress the root canal filling in, and then it's pressed into those microscopic areas. But we don't fool ourselves. We know that we don't achieve 100% seal, but it's the best that the technology will allow us to do at this point.
So you're really dependent upon a person's immune system to some degree.
Oh, absolutely. If our immune system was not functional, I don't think there's much in medicine or dentistry that would really be successful. I mean, our job as health professionals is to help the body do its job, to take
right.
away the impediments that prevent the body from doing its own natural healing. Because the body wants to heal, and that's something, if somebody has an infection, if the nerve dies and that nerve death then allows bacteria to grow inside the tooth, then we say that tooth is infected. And that infection will spread outside the tooth into the bone around the tooth. And what we see on radiographs is that we see shadows, which indicates bone that's been lost. Well, that's not just a rampant infection that's just going unchecked. The body's immune system is doing its best to eliminate the infection, but because the bacteria, the source bacteria, are enclosed within that tooth structure, the body's immune cells can't get into that tooth anymore. There's no longer blood vessels carrying the immune cells in there. And so that's our job then, to remove that source bacteria. And then once that happens, then the body will actually heal that bone that's been lost outside the tooth from the original infection. And that's one of the indicators, that's the best indicator that we have that we've been successful. And we see the body actually make new bone to replace the bone that was lost due to the infection.
Is there any correlation between diabetics and root canals?
Well, we haven't found a correlation in terms of are diabetics more likely to need root canals.
Right.
But we definitely
No, I mean success. I'm talking about success rate.
Right. That's a hard question because intuitively we know that diabetics healing their immune system or healing system is not as robust as people that are not diabetic. And the poorer the diabetic control, the greater they are at risk for unchecked infection. But unfortunately, there are so many other variables that affect the success of a root canal, it really clouds the picture. But we just kind of say, let's use common sense and say, diabetics are at greater risk for complications from infection if they're not taken care of.
Okay, now, one of the sticky points in dentistry is, and it's not talked about, at least I haven't heard a lot of discussion or read a lot of discussion about it. I have two sticky points. One of them is general dentists that are taught to do these very speedy techniques, like one appointment root canals, and would you comment on not that so much, because I don't want to put you on the spot, but what percentage of the root canals that you do that are sent to you are from general dentists who have done the root canal first and it has failed? Do you have any numbers on that?
Well, I don't have numbers, but percentages.
Yes, that's what I mean.
It's around 50%. It's actually a little under 50%. I don't really know the reason. If you look at the numbers across the country, it tends to be around 50% are retreatments, meaning the root canal hasn't succeeded.
Yeah.
And I mean, I wouldn't point the finger and say, well, this dentist or that dentist didn't sure. do a good job. But in fact, the majority of the root canals that don't succeed, if it's not a structural problem with the tooth, if it's directly related to the root canal, it's because the nerve space wasn't adequately either located, where they just yeah. didn't find all the canals, or they didn't adequately sterilize or clean out that tissue. And so, you know, I wouldn't say don't be fast and efficient, because no patient wants to be in the chair any longer than necessary. You spend as much time as is required to do a good job. And the problem is that some dentists that go, that, well, again, I don't want to point fingers. It's
yes.
that some people don't really understand what the criteria is for a good job.
Yeah.
And if you don't know when you've done a good job, you don't know when to stop or how long to go. So it comes down to training. I mean, I see plenty of well done root canals by general dentists. And mm-hmm. so I know there are general dentists that have adequate training and have the skill to do good root canal treatment. I will say that the best root canals, the dentists who do the best root canals as general dentists are the dentists who recognize when they shouldn't be doing root canals.
Yeah,
in other words,
right.
they're very good at diagnosing cases that require the skills of someone who's had additional training.
Well, another addendum to that is that the further back you go from the front, the harder the root canal is going to be. So dentists doing molar root canals have a real challenge on their hands, whereas opposed to the front teeth, you have a whole different access area. And if when a general dentist doesn't have a microscope and they don't have a CT scan radiology facility, that's going to affect their effectiveness.
There's no question about it.
I think the point here for the listeners is that if you are having a root canal, you want to be given the option to see an endodontist.
Well, I think that thought process should go through the mind of the general dentist. I think that they should, each general dentist should look at the case, each tooth specific. Each individual tooth, is this a tooth that is within, I am speaking now if I were the general dentist, is this a tooth that treating this tooth is within my skill set?
Yes.
And
yes,
if the answer is yes and they're experienced in it, then that's fine. They're very likely to get a good root canal treatment done. And if not, then that's the time that you say, you know, there are these people that go through yeah. the additional years of training, and so let's utilize them, and that's what we're here for.
Well, to the general dentist's advantage, the techniques and materials have improved a lot. So it's helpful from that standpoint. But it's still a sticky wicket, as they say, because here a person thinks, well, if they just get a root canal, they're going to have the problem solved. But it's complex.
It is, and unfortunately that's the reflection of how dentistry in general is viewed more and more now. Dentistry, I think, is viewed more and more as a commodity.
Yeah.
It's like if you're going to get a root canal or a crown, it's like getting your brakes done. You go in and get
yeah.
it done, and it's done. And there's no difference in the level of quality that's required or that's rendered. And I think that's not true. I don't think a person would think of that if they were going to get their heart surgery done or their back surgery
sure.
done. So, you know, I think that's unfortunate. I think.
Well, that brings us to a subject I was going to tackle later, and that's insurance company benefits. They insurance companies and their benefit programs try to determine what kind of work is going to be done on a patient and not allow the dentist to determine that. So, what are your findings in that field and the effect of the insurance company benefits?
Well, first of all, I think the fact that we in this country have the dental insurance is available for so many people, I think, is a tremendous asset.
Oh, yes.
That's wonderful.
Definitely.
But I do think that people, patients, need to understand that insurance companies exist not out of goodwill. They're there as businesses to make money, and they view their profit and loss as how little can we pay out for this procedure and still make a profit. And so they really try and reduce what they pay. And I mean, I speak from experience, the insurance reimbursement rates in San Antonio lag significantly in other metropolitan areas and have not increased significantly ever since I've been here. So that's 16 years in the city. So, you know, it's a problem because patients then think, well, that's what I should pay.
Yeah.
And in reality, the insurance companies are not offering anywhere near what the dentist needs to be compensated for
right.
in order to be able to provide high-level care in 2017.
Right. Well, now, it brings us to another subject that isn't talked about too much. I've done a few DNA analyses of extracted teeth and find that there'll be as many as 25, 20, maybe even 30 very significant medical pathogens, bad bacteria that don't need bacteria that are living in the roots of root canal teeth or just teeth in general that are infected where the nerve has died but haven't been received root canal treatment yet, and yet also some teeth that have had root canal treatment. So the medication, I really like the way y'all are treating teeth by putting the medication into the root and letting it sit a month so as to allow that material to diffuse. What kind of percentage do you think of bacterial control do you have when you do that? Or do you have a way of...
Well, unfortunately, the more, as time goes on, there used to be, I'd say, 20 years ago plus, you know, the number of bacteria that you would say live in teeth would have been, you know, 5 or 4
yeah.
or 3.
Yeah.
But now as we've developed more DNA testing, we're able to identify, and it's going to be more and more and more. And it's not just bacteria, it's viruses and yeast. And,
yeah.
And so, you know, I don't know that there is an answer to that. It's, you
okay.
know, it's whatever is findable now. But certainly there are bacteria that live inside of teeth. The less cleaned out the tooth is, the more bacteria. I mean, obviously, if you have a tooth that's the nerve is dead or necrotic, as we say, and is infected, then it's just basically a culture or a test tube full of bacteria, and it's
mm-hmm.
the perfect breeding ground inside mm-hmm. the human body. And then a poorly done root canal that doesn't completely remove that is going to leave a certain amount of that, and then they multiply and grow. What we hope to do when we use both the medication to eliminate as many bacteria as possible and then the seal is that even if we don't eliminate 100%, and
mm-hmm.
again, you know, I think it's unrealistic to think that we do, then we seal them. We use sealing materials to basically entomb them so that if they're encased
mm-hmm.
inside the tooth, they can't grow. They can't communicate with the outside of the tooth to allow an infection to develop outside the tooth. And so that's basically the theory of root canal treatment in a nutshell.
In your experience, what are you seeing or what have you seen in failing root canals and systemic health?
Well, the research has been coming out probably for, I don't know, 20 years or so, that we're seeing systemic health issues that we never really thought would be associated with dental infections of any kind, whether it be periodontal, meaning gum infections, or endodontic or root canal infections, that there's a correlation between cardiovascular disease, cardiovascular health, but we don't really know the cause and effect. We simply make observations and we
yeah.
say, well, we see that there's an infection here in the mouth, and then we see among those patients a higher level of inflammatory mediators indicating that there are things going on in heart tissue. But nobody's been able to make the jump to say that this is a causative issue or
right.
what can you do to eliminate that and verify it. That it's causative and then eliminated as a cause. But there's strong suspicion that oral health in general and bacterial population in the mouth has an effect on systemic health, and obviously untreated infection, just intuitively you have to say, you know, does it make sense to leave infection untreated once you identify it? And
right.
You know, that's part of my conversation I have with my patients. We always talk about the options, you know, when you have an identified infection is, you know, you can do three things. You can do nothing and leave it. You can take your tooth out. That's a very high success rate of curing the infection, but then has all other attendant problems. Or we try and have the middle ground where we remove the infection but keep the tooth, and that's the root canal. And we pretty well discount the doing nothing treatment pretty early on because, mm-hmm. you know, it just makes sense if you have infection to do the best you can to eliminate it.
Now, has there been any studies showing inflammatory markers changing when root canals are successfully treated or abscess teeth?
There are. You know, the C-reactive protein is the one that's been in the news the most. And we find significant reduction when we eliminate infection, really of any kind, but dental infections are no exception to that. And so we find, you know, reduction in inflammatory markers. We don't know, you know, we think that those are just that, just markers. They're indicative. They're things that we know that we can find that indicate that there's a problem. But, you know, what those markers really mean, other than the fact that there's ongoing inflammation, we don't really know.
What about, is there any correlation studies with arthritis? Rheumatoid arthritis.
Well, that, you know, I'd be hard-pressed to give. I can't speak to that. I mean,
right.
We know that rheumatoid arthritis is, you know, it's an autoimmune disease where the body attacks itself, and mm-hmm. we think there's a strong genetic cause to that, underlying cause. But I can't address whether root canal affect that or not.
I didn't know if there had been some study somewhere in Sweden or Norway or some other country that might have shown these things. We're always looking for a edge on that type of information. Now then, one of the things that we see as a general dentist is a tooth will have, it'll be abscessed. Patients haven't been in for, say, 10 years, haven't seen a dentist in 10 years, and they have pretty sizable infection appearing in bone loss at the end of a root. Do you have any guidelines as to what is going to work or when you're going to send that tooth out to be extracted or when you're going to go ahead and treat it? Like I'm talking about granulation tissue at the end of a root.
Well, yeah, I think that's a really good question. We have found that the larger the amount of bone loss, meaning the bigger the shadow on the X-ray, relates to the relative chance of success of the root canal. But that doesn't end there. That doesn't mean just because there's a lot of bone loss that the tooth is not a salvageable tooth.
Mm-hmm.
The way we treat that is that we treat the inside of the tooth, remove the source of the infection, and we wait to watch and see if the body will heal all of that bone loss on its own. The larger the area of bone loss, the less chance that it will heal just on its own. And I explain that to patients by saying that there's a large knot of tissue out there that's not healthy. Your body's trying to repair it.
Okay.
But when it's too large, your body can't get enough reparative cells in there. So in those cases, if it's in an area that we can reach and is accessible surgically, we'll actually go in with a secondary procedure. This is a gum surgery. It's not a big deal, but we go in and we actually remove that infected tissue.
Mm-hmm.
By doing that, plus having removed the initial source of the infection inside the tooth, we get a very high degree of success of healing. So simply having a large area of infection does not doom a tooth to failure.
Pain or no pain in driving a patient to take action?
You mean in terms of getting them to seek care?
Well, patients feel like that if they don't have any pain, the tooth isn't a problem. So what do we need to do to convince people that that's not a good strategy? Just waiting for a tooth to be painful before you take action.
Yeah, I mean, we see a number of patients that dentists are diligent and they pick up on those things on their own x-rays and send them to us. And the patient are asked, they ask that question, so, you know, why do I need to treat this tooth if it doesn't hurt me? And I simply explain, you know, this shadow that you see on your x-ray isn't there for no reason. It's there because of bacterial infection inside the tooth, and now that's spread out into the bone. The only reason it's not hurting you is that at this point in time, the type of bacteria that are involved are not the kind that elicit pain and swelling. Otherwise, that's what you'd have. But it's still bacterial infection, and, you know, as kind of medical scientists, we have to say, does it make sense to leave an infection in the bone, even when it's not causing symptoms? And when I put it to patients that way, I can't even remember anybody saying, no, that's okay, I'm just going to leave it there.
Yeah.
You know, it just doesn't make sense. Even if we don't know precisely what its effect it's going to be on other parts of the body before it becomes the type of infection that causes pain. And usually when I present it that way, in a pretty objective way, people say, yeah, let's get this taken care of.
Well, one of the things that's a real problem for us as general dentists, we've been working on this forever, decades, is how to motivate people to really take their teeth seriously. What are some of the things that you've learned since you've been a general dentist, you've been in biomaterials, you're an endodontist? What kind of wisdom can you impart to us general dentists that a tooth is really the ultimate accessory?
Well, that's a hard one, because they're essentially, I see people kind of fall into two big broad categories. The people that grow up as kids, having been taught by their parents that their teeth are important, and they don't need much convincing. And then there are other people that grew up, and many times it was in situations where money was tight and you know, that dentistry, dental care kind of fell a little lower on the priority tree, and they carried that into their adult life. And so, you know, it's hard. I mean, I just try and present things as objectively as possible and say, you know, do you want to have this tooth to function with? You know, both for ease of chewing and your general comfort in life, as well as cosmetics. But it's a hard argument. I mean, if you actually have to convince someone of that, it's difficult. Most of our patients, fortunately, already kind of have that in the back of their mind already. They grew up with it, and so they're pretty willing listeners.
Sure. Well, a question that I have not seen anything, and I don't know how you can find the answer, but I'm just wondering about if there's been any kind of studies anywhere in the world about age teeth and aging teeth, like the lady I was describing. She's 104. What's that tissue like inside that tooth?
Well, one of the natural occurrences is as people get older, their bodies and the tissue in their bodies change. And of course, that's not any big revelation. We can look in the mirror and see that. But it applies to teeth too. And so that tissue inside the tooth that's the living tissue tends to become more calcified as time goes on.
Right.
And many of our patients are 70, 80, 90, like you said. We've had some that were in their hundreds. And those are challenging teeth to deal with from a root canal standpoint, because there's very little living tissue in there. There is some, though. I mean, and certainly they can have the same types of problems, but technically it becomes more difficult. So that's just a fact.
Well, if you have living tissue, you've got an immune system in there, for one thing.
Right.
But I'm just wondering if you have seen in your experience, because these, evidently the body has a mechanism for carrying these teeth into these aged areas or timelines, it seems like.
Well, and I explain that to patients when we're looking at x-rays, and I say, as you can see in this x-ray, compared to the ideal tooth where you can see a plain dark space here that represents a nerve space, your tooth, it looks like solid tooth. I explain it, it's kind of like you had years and years and years of low-grade insult to your tooth. Mm-hmm. And your tooth is basically building up a callus inside itself, just like we build up calluses on our hands or feet from walking. Your tooth will do the same thing. And so essentially it's calcifying itself. It's trying to wall itself off from these minor insults of just day-to-day life. And the reaction to that, the only mechanism teeth have is to fill in that space that used to be occupied with nerves and blood vessels with calcified tooth structure.
Have any studies been done on how perfect the seal is on these calcifications on these roots?
Well, it's not perfect at all. I mean, it's nature's attempt, but yeah. it's not perfect. I mean, certainly we can actually get small instruments into them, and so, you know, we're not,
sure.
compared to the size of bacteria, it's not really a seal at all.
Okay. All right, tell us how anybody can get a hold of you and where your office is located.
Well, certainly. The vast majority of our patients are referred to us from their general dentist, and that's a good mechanism of screening because, you know, a patient comes in and either they have some signs or symptoms of a problem, and the general dentist can look first and say, is this a root canal type problem? Because certainly if they're having some other type of problem, a gum tissue problem, then they wouldn't want to send them to us. So we're typically a referral-based practice, but we do have patients that come to us, especially patients that have seen us before and they know what root canal pains and problems are like, and they'll come back to us. But our office is on Sonterra Boulevard. We're 1130 Sonterra, East Sonterra Boulevard, right across from the Methodist Hospital, kind of in that 281-1604 intersection area. And really the best way to get to us is through general dentist. And if a patient doesn't have a general dentist or somebody's new to town, for whatever reason, they can just give our office a call. I mean, we're called Endodontic Consultants of San Antonio is our official name. But,
and your phone number?
Our phone number is 210-497-6699, and we have a wonderful office staff that's happy to help people. They can answer any questions that they have about trying to decide if they have a root canal type problem, and they can help them with scheduling, and they can help them with cost information. We try and make sure everybody has a very good idea of cost. We don't want anybody coming in the door with false expectations. We try and be as transparent as possible in communicating with our patients about every single bit of their care, both technical care as well as financial side.
Well, you've been so helpful, and I can say that I use y'all a lot, and I use you because I can count on the outcome, even some teeth that I'm very skeptical of. And it's really wonderful to have your people. You have three doctors, Dr. Hoskins, Dr. Swartz, and Dr. Davis, yourself. Then y'all are always available and do an incredible technical job because it's not an easy job, that's for sure. And as evidenced by all the jokes that have been passed on through the years about people not rather have a root canal than some horrific other thing. But you guys make it all work. And really compliment you. And I want my listeners to realize that root canals serve a real valuable process. And I have some in my mouth, and I have a implant as well, and I have natural teeth, so I can compare all of them on a personal basis. And so I just want to sum up how you would sum up your summation to my listeners about not being afraid of having a root canal treatment.
Well, I think there are a couple of things. I mean, first off, people are concerned because they don't understand it. And when they come in as patients, we can explain, as I kind of did briefly earlier, explain exactly what's involved. But one thing that we didn't talk about today, and I do like for patients to understand that, is that pain is not an issue. I mean, they may be having pain before they come in, but pain while we do root canal treatment is not a problem. We have all types of advanced methods of anesthetic to keep them comfortable, so we never want anybody to shy away from getting an evaluation to see if they do have potentially have a root canal problem, because they're afraid of discomfort, because that's just not an issue. It's a well-traveled rumor, but it's just not fact.
That is so true. Well, listen, thank you so very much. Have a wonderful Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, and I hope my listeners want you to have a very blessed holiday time. And Dr. Davis, thank you so much for giving your valuable Sunday afternoon time. Give our regards to your children for letting you break away for a short time. And thank you so much, everybody. Have a great holiday, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.